The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this, my friends, is the Force Center podcast feed, and this is our main show. I am Ken Napsok.
And I am Joseph Scrimshaw, and this main show is going to be full of news and then also equally full of Qs. The Q stands for questions. I'm excited about both our news and our questions, Ken.
Yeah, we are going to be talking about the big news, Knights of the Old Republic, the remake, the game, all that stuff. We'll be diving into our thoughts on that, our reactions, and whether or not the big question, you or I will be able to play the game. That's there as well. Questions coming up as always. We always appreciate your questions, but we want to remind you all that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But that is not all.
No, there is another offer. Inside Editions, they are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books as well as other pop culture books, and they are offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35, or you can visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend the Inside Editions book, Secrets of the Jedi. What secrets will be revealed? What cheeses do they like? That's not in the book, but there are other great secrets, and there is a companion book coming out soon called Secrets of the Sith, so check that all out with the code FC35.
Check it all out, my friends. Star Wars or Life Adventures are up next, and well, I think my voice is disguising the exhaustion, Joseph, but it might be a hard task. A lot of travel and fun and crazy things, and I know you've been up to your eyeballs in life, both fun, challenging, and trivia studying. It's all there, but what's been going on?
Yeah, for me, definitely, you know, some work stuff, some life stuff, but truly, I am mostly just barely a human. I am a container for Star Wars facts. As we are recording this today, later today, I'm recording a match for the great movie trivia schmodown, a Star Wars match. We'll see how it turns out. But that contest has become even more intense, even more deep. So I've really spent almost the entire week studying. Some of it is a lot of numbers, which I have a hard time with. They're not necessarily my favorite thing to memorize in Star Wars. But I did find some things of like, I've always wondered that. Because that's where the depth is, right, Ken? Where like,
yeah,
something will pass on screen and it'll be like, I'm not even sure quite how to Google that, and it'll be work to find it.
You type alien and back with red shirt.
Yep, and you get a lot of weird things. But one thing that I've tried to look up before that I have not been able to find, but I did find this time, and it's such a weird thing to be excited about, Ken, but we try to find our joy where we can.
Yeah.
Maybe other fans have known this forever, but I finally personally found the actual Star Wars name for Padme Amidala's funeral space horses. I have looked in the past and I could not find it. It is a Gular, which is different than the horse-like species Gulara, which one of the Venator-class Star Destroyers is named after.
Of course.
The Gular is the horses that accompany, four of them, I believe, that accompany them to Padme's funeral, accompany Padme on her funeral journey.
This
with
is
the Jabor snippet.
Yeah, that I know, right? I'm getting the sweats. It's so funny. I don't mean to mock this a bit of information, but I'm having a fun tone with it, which is weird because I've been the one for years going, well, it's called a DL-44, which remember, you know, no one knew that at one point, right?
Yep.
And how it's part of the fun of Star Wars, but then that's overwhelming.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, I think that's, you know, we might be doing some discussions on this about like the nature of Star Wars trivia. It's a really fun thing of like, well, I loved learning the DL-44. I knew that because it was on the back of the Power of the Force 2 Han Solo action figure. And I thought that was cool because that's one of the coolest blasters ever. And I wanted to memorize it, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's fascinating about this journey is you come across some like names or some numbers. Oh, great. Shura is the fruit that is delivered by Tecla Minow that Anakin floats. Cool. I want to know that. But even the numbers-based ones are so about that divide between, like, if it's a ship or a blaster that I like, then it's kind of fun and I want to know that. And other times, just like, there are a lot of Separatist ships, and I really don't need to know the actual model number of every one, you know?
Nor do I want to with those Separatists.
Yeah, I mean Separatists, but that's been life, my life adventure. I'm sure you remember this episode of Cheers featuring Woody, of course, Tobias Beckett, where he wants to beat Carla at a sports trivia contest, and she claims she can't be beat. He studies forever. She asks him three really difficult questions. He answers and everybody cheers for him. And then they like try to start talking to him. And he just keeps spouting random sports facts and he has to be dragged away.
Yes.
That's the way I feel right now, you know?
Yeah. 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 You're in game shape, which is great. But yeah, that's the brain starts to twist upon itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my wife is telling me things about let's go on our work. And I'm like, okay. I need to remember this person's job title. Like, no, you don't. You can just ask her. Nobody's going to quiz you on that person's job title at your wife's work. You can just ask her.
It's, you're rewatching Veep. It's, we all need a Tony Hale whispering in our ears. This is the congressman from Alabama's daughter. Yeah.
Exactly. This is Ainley Team of Malastair. Anyway, that's my life adventure. You have been in Vegas and your voice sounds great for it.
Look, whew, deep breath. A lot of fun. I was there with a few people, a large group of friends kind of went, and that's kind of a fun experience in itself. And we were there for, 4 actual days, 3 nights, which is a long time to be in Vegas. As much as I love Vegas, you start to get that feel of that third morning where you're like, we're still here. Okay. All right. But then we rallied. We had a lot of fun. And I was trying to find the Star Wars of it all. And I don't know if I've discussed this in years past. There was at one point a Star Wars slot machine. I did play it. I played it a number of years ago in, there's a casino. It always changes hands for a while. It was like a Hooters casino. Now it's like a OYO casino. I don't know. It's across from MGM Grand off of, not on Las Vegas Boulevard, off the side street there. And I remember that because that it had a Star Wars slot machine. I haven't seen it since. And I'm walking around because I love the Lord of the Rings slots. I love the Game of Thrones slots. They took my money, but made it back on blackjack. We're okay. But I was like, I kind of would like a Star Wars game. There's, Titanic and all these other Ghostbusters. Everything is licensed. Everything is there.
The Titanic one is my favorite of try your luck at famous horrific accident.
Right? Like there should be a Hindenburg one. but there isn't really a Star Wars one that I could find. And I think at the end of the day, I worked through my brain. Drive it home. I did think about this. I think I'm okay with that. I think of all the things Star Wars is, from breakfast cereals to bags of oranges to whatever in between, I like that maybe Star Wars is not overrepresented in the casinos of Las Vegas.
I think it makes sense. Like it really amuses me to like you walk up to this like cool, it's a prequel era slot machine and the lights go off pew, 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 and Star Wars noise. And then you just like hear Qui-Gon saying, right? Whenever you gamble, eventually you lose, my friend.
Yeah. Which would be a perfect sign off one. I mean, the Cersei, whenever you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. That was horrible when I was cashing out with my 20 cents left from the 100 I put in there. So
there is a third option that you lose a lot of money, right?
Yeah. So Qui-Gon Tisk and me would be fun. But yeah, I don't mean to turn this into some big moral, conversation and morality tale of Star Wars and the slots. But yeah, unless it was like a Sith game where it's just like more power, unlimited bonus features, like then maybe I could get behind.
Yeah. No, I could understand that if it was a slot machine to teach you about greed.
maybe they did try that, and that's why all the casinos are like, not that one. We're not putting that in there.
Yeah. Unlimited gin and tonics as long as you sit here and play.
City of Sin. Yes. Right. So, I've survived. It was great. Actually, really healthy. That was a concern, obviously. You know, you always get that Vegas flu anyways, but feeling really good, which shows masks, washing your hands, and minding your own distance is effective. You know, staying back. So it was good. It was a good time. A lot of fun.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. I'm glad you minded your own distance. That's a good turn of phrase.
Mind your own distance. There was people I wanted to yell that at. you know, it is what it is. So from there, I'm going to take a deep breath, and we are going to roll on and dive into the Star Wars news, playing catch up on one story. But one, we're kind of relatively timely for Force Center. The joke always being big news or some kind of news released on the day after we record. But we get to discuss this one, Joseph. Knights of the Old Republic is going to be remade. All right, here's some of the details of this story. As always, you can go to StarWars.com and get a little bit more information. As part of the PlayStation Showcase, there's so many cons and conventions and showcases and investor days. I forget which when they pop up and what they are. But the PlayStation Showcase featured a teaser trailer that revealed one of the most beloved Star Wars games of all time is getting remade. This is, of course, Knights of the Old Republic. So we'll dive in here first, Joseph. Now, the trailer itself is pretty cool. I guess we could start there. You got Jennifer Hale back as the character Bastila, and reveal of Revan, right? Everyone loves Revan. Revan even has a Black Series figure. Everyone loves Revan. And that's kind of the trailer. So I'll just ask you first there, Joseph. What do you think about that little tease?
I think it's a really good tease because it is in great Star Wars tradition. It is speaking to old fans and new, right? That's a great nostalgia trailer of this voice you love, this character you love is back. Then look at this iconic character of Revan. That's back. But also if you're dealing with like a younger fan who hasn't played or maybe somebody who jumped on board with the sequels or Mandalorian, I think it's a great enticement of like, I've kind of heard whispers of this old thing. Mm-hmm. What is it? And I think it's just a really effective pop on Revan's mask, right? Like there's a reason that Revan is popular, many reasons why he's popular, but yeah. The aesthetic is one of them. And that mask is just powerful. It's one of the like really good masks of Star Wars.
They even say in the interview, one of the game developers saying, hey, you know, it's cool. and we all always agree there's a certain level of Star Wars cool we all enjoy celebrating. So, as I said, this is a remake, to be clear, and it will be exclusive to the PS5 and PCs at the time of launch. Now, unclear if that will change, but that was a pretty specific use of that sentence there, at the time of launch. So I'm going to also dive in here, Joseph. PS5s, you and I, you know, we use our allowance money wisely. We don't have PS5s yet. A lot of people don't. You know, a lot of people are PC gamers. I am not. Joseph, I don't believe you are. But what do you think about this?
The way I interpreted this was, hey, you have to buy a PS5 now. like the unclear if that will change with other games, game systems. Yeah, I'm sure it will come out to more, but I'm not seeing maybe long after its release, it'll be like, do you still have a PlayStation 4 like an old monster? Fine. Like, but that's the way I interpreted it of like, it is time to, you know.
Yeah.
You got to get a new one if you want to keep up with the times.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's how they get you. That's how they get you, scallions. But, you know, it is what I mean. Eventually, it's not like I'm boycotting Getty One. Everything's just like, I have two working PS4s. I am blessed, right? I am blessed. What am I going to do? So, and the games are still great. I'm having fun with Red Dead Redemption 2 online and MLB The Show. But, yeah, this starts happening, and you start getting that little nagging power, unlimited power voice in your head going, I must consume and get a PS5.
Exactly.
Texas-based Asper Studios has been heading up the project for some time because, you know, these things don't spring up over the weekend. So that's kind of cool. I always love when, you know, we are out here speculating on Star Wars and whatever we're going to enjoy in 2 years is already 3 years into development. The big question, Joseph, though, is canon. We got to know about canon, which I understand. On this project specifically, this is a big question to ask. This is a remake from a game that came out during a different time, a different era, pre-Disney, and we just kind of accepted that as the story. of thousands and thousands of generations ago. Story takes, what, roughly 4,000 years before. So an article on StarWars.com kind of describing all this, this big interview with the two leads of the game, described the game as part of Legends. But writer Dan Brooks had tweeted out in response, there's a lot of tweets to go through, saying, well, that was actually referring to the old game. But at the same time, Story Group's Matt Martin, who has also said, I'm not directly involved with this one. This isn't in my portfolio over there, the old job there, tweeted that the article seemed to answer the question that everyone was going to ask him, he's out and about on Twitter, so he's going to get that question a lot. Mm-hmm. That made me think, well, no, we're not looking at canon. And then I was looking a little bit more. Again, we're going to get to our you and I's personal experience with the game, and my experience with the game is very small and very limited. I understand a lot of the plots, points, and the characters and the time frame. I don't know about you, Joseph. I think this already would put it slightly at odds with the High Republic. So it's a fair question to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think right now in terms of the canon question, right, of it is 4,000 years ahead. So like timeline, it doesn't overlap with High Republic. Right. For me, the whole canon question is just really a matter of what kind of room do you want to keep for other stories being told, right? Yeah. I think that's just something that the whole Lucasfilm, all the powers that be need to be mindful of. If there are going to be movies or television shows set in an era like this eventually, do we want to have a video game to contend with, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's also just the, in terms of the balance of updating the video game, they talk a lot in that great interview about, well, we have to update it enough so it's worth updating, but we also have to keep it absolutely pure to what people love. And I assume that they're talking about both the tech, but also like some of the storytelling interactions.
Right.
So it's that question of, is there anything that's kind of classic and cool about Knights of the Old Republic that you'd want to keep, but you also do just kind of have to nudge it in a certain way to fit in with modern canon?
Yeah, and finding little smudges, right, to just kind of erase the edges and draw it back to what we know. Because one of the things, just you read the description of the game, and it's like, hey, 4,000 years ago, the Republic was at its height. It's like, that doesn't track for me personally with what we're seeing in the High Republic. It's a different era, and it's a great era. It's an era of peace and all this stuff, but it's peace and growth and progress, and that's what we're dealing with the High Republic. So that's where my mind went first. So would you, you and I talk a lot about canon versus legends and what we worry about and what we don't worry about. In this particular game, are you good with it just being legends? You personally, Joseph Scrimshaw, the fan base might have a problem with it, but are you okay with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is to really do just take a step back and say, like, what experience do you want to have as a player or somebody absorbing a story? And this has been the power of it, right? That you play this story and you get to experience it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it doesn't matter for me if it's legends or canon, you still get to experience that story. I think there can be that discussion, that feeling that saying it's canon gives it this like extra level of legitimacy, mm-hmm. Which I understand why people feel that way. But especially since it's 4,000 years ago, there's a part of me that's just kind of likes the idea that, well, history as of around the time of, you know, maybe the High Republic, even history knows that there was a Sith called Revan during the wars. But we don't know, but there are a lot of different stories about him, right. You know, and right. Maybe this is one and maybe there's another, and maybe the stories don't have to agree necessarily. And we could kind of embrace that kind of truth of history, that even history begins to take on a myth-like quality because sometimes we don't know the full story and we never can.
Yeah. And playing with the fuzzy memories of everyone involved as the story goes on. Now, some of the characters, and I was just double checking my own notes here. Bane, I know, is canon from references in Clone Wars and stuff like that. Revan was slated to appear in Ghosts of Mortis, did not. So I'm running through my mind, is Revan even officially canon, to get hung up on the little details? And I don't believe he is.
Revan is in this current era of,
yes,
I think, right. Debate of what matters, because where he has been mentioned in canon is the Sith troopers on Exegol are divided up into, I think, legions, and the legions all have names of great Sith of the past, and one of the legions is Revan. So that's quite a few layers deep. I know the visual dictionary is canon, right? But as we've seen already with some of the storytelling between books and comics and what's on screen, that I think we also just need to be mindful of, kind of like it was back when this was made and George Lucas was like, hey, everybody, go have fun. I'll change any damn thing I want when I put something on screen myself.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't think we're quite there, but I think it does matter that screen is going to take precedence.
Yeah, and I think I'm always on that side of the conversation. I really think I am. And these are, great pull on the visual dictionary deep cut there. That's almost like you've been studying a lot in the last week. I think with these characters having such a big presence in the fandom, to much similar to Thrawn, like finding a way to work it back in and kind of sync things up, and maybe, you know, a lot of people say, hey, what about a reference to Exegol or Sith Eternal, those kind of things. I'd be really excited. I do think, it's best to keep your heart and mind and soul open to all the possibilities, but I think it's such a big story, it's such a big character. I could enjoy there being a little bit of a remade connection, if you will. But I also think, and I want to ask you here, Joseph, I think this will inspire a new era of Knights of the Old Republic content, including maybe, but not limited to, shows, movies, or something more, books, comics. It should spark a renewed interest and an also fresh interest in the new generation of fans, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm most excited about. Like, I'm super excited for this game, and I'm super excited for the fans of this game. It means, you know, so much to so many Star Wars fans, and I'm thrilled for it. But in terms of what it might inspire on screen, I'm so excited for a movie trilogy, a Disney Plus show that gets into this era, an era where there are multiple Sith, there are multiple Jedi, and they're fighting, because that's like such a big deal. And we haven't seen that on screen. It's, for me, it's something that I just like. I really think it is one of the best ways. Star Wars is so in this position right now where I feel like they need to balance the old and the new on screen. And that's, in some ways, you can't get more classic of like the Jedi with their green and blue and sometimes purple and gold lightsabers, and the Sith with their red lightsabers. But there are hundreds of them, and their philosophy is slightly different because it's a longer time ago. It's so exciting to me that I would love to see stuff set in, you know, Old Republic. We're talking about potentially thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
And all of that to me, I think, is far more interesting than a direct adaptation of the game. I think a direct adaptation of the story of the game is dangerous because the power of the game is you get to go through it, right?
Yes.
So you're adapting everybody's personal experience.
Yes.
That seems like a challenging adaptation. And I mean, Revan's a great character, so I'd be even happy with the Disney Plus Revan show. And maybe you can leave enough room that the game could, you know, the details of the game, you know, don't matter, right?
Yeah.
That could be true or it could be not, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you know, listening to you talk here, I'm like, yeah, find me a video game adaptation that, you know, it's gone into a movie that's gone overwhelmingly well, you know, and maybe in the last couple of years, you might have better examples of it. And, you know, Last of Us, a lot of people have hopes in that. And I was a fan of the first Uncharted game. I don't know if I'll ever see that in film, you know, or, you know, it will work. I don't know. We'll find out. So, yeah, a direct adaptation, it's almost impossible. So it would have to inspire. And some of the things you're talking about here, but, and I've talked about before, of the big giant battles, I do believe those belong on screen, and specifically maybe even the big screen, not to spark that kind of debate, where these should play. But I think there's such great potential in these stories that I like you, I'm really excited what this could mean. And my final note on that is I don't necessarily think this game is being brought back to test any waters. I think the game's being brought back because it's a damn popular game.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this is about a video game. Like, yes, this is a kind of people have been asking for this for years, right? And if Lucasfilm announced tomorrow, like, yeah, we are actually one of those movies we have slated is actually going to be a Knights of the Old Republic adaptation, then I would be happy for the fans who are happy and go, all right, let's go on this ride.
Yeah.
And find out, you know. But I think I'm just excited to let the video game be the video game, and I'm more excited to see new stories in this era.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, that's might be where I sit as well, which begs the big question, and we have mentioned this even before when some rumors of this game, and anytime this game comes up, like I said up top, you and I know we didn't play it as much as others, at least speaking for myself here, I played it 0%, never have touched the game. You though, did you have it on like your phone or iPad recently? Did I remember that right?
Yeah. So like I was gonna get it back in the day, and then I feared that my life would fall apart, like literally. Like I when I bought the laptop that I had at the time, which was the first computer I bought myself, I quizzed my friend who worked at Apple to make sure that that computer had the specs to play this video game. And then people were like, it's so immersive. And I was just like, I will destroy my own life. I can't. I'll play it in a year.
Yeah.
And then time gets by. And then recently, maybe 3 months ago, I finally downloaded it to my iPad. I think I'm at about 20%. I'm really enjoying it. It's a great game. It's a great nostalgia trip because it's very different, right? To play a game that was made back then now. But right now, my enemies, Ken, are time and a Rancor. always having a hard time. Hard to find time to really devote a ton of time to the video game plan. And also I ran into a Rancor, and I don't have enough health. I don't have enough weapons. So I got to backtrack. It's one of those points.
I'd love to actually see that in a Knights of the Old Republic Star Wars movie where there's just an entire act of the movie is them powering up to fight a Rancor.
Yes. I mean, isn't that thrilling narrative content where people like just they see a Rancor and they're like, we don't have enough medicine or bombs. So let's backtrack to exactly where we were. It's going to take about 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then come back through these pipes and fight that Rancor.
Let's go get XP. We need XP. Let's go beat up some lesser villains.
If they released a Disney Plus show that was Knights of the Old Republic : Grind, I think that would be a really, really interesting experiment.
So I guess if we pony up and get those PS5s, will this, Joseph, finally be our chance to truly play this game, sit on a couch, give up a month of our lives? Is this what's going to happen?
I think maybe I want to finish the old one on my iPad. So I know the story points, you know, and all that, but I'm really excited to experience it for myself. I have to say, I think the thing that would make me really go, I want to give the time is if there were a lot of sort of, if there were a lot of narrative updates or it was an effort to kind of make it fit into more modern canon, then I'd be pretty fascinated.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm actually in a wonderful position. The reasons I never played the game in the past, I couldn't really tell you. Didn't do a lot of gaming at that point in my life. Was a Star Wars fan. Clearly, it's always been part of my life, but it was like an era of post-Sith. What are we doing? I don't know. And other things going on. And I just didn't do it. There's no real reason. Not me fighting against the game at all. So I think this would be a good time for me to sit down with a completely clean slate. Other than knowing what friends have whispered in my ears for years about, then this happened, and then you get to do this. Oh, cool. Now I could experience myself. So I think, it's on my radar screen as something to do. And if you guys are all wondering why Force Center's not having episodes for a month, that might be wrong.
Yes, a little hiatus to go to the Old Republic.
Yes, indeed. So it's exciting stuff. And like Joseph said, I echo it. We are sharing our personal experiences with the game, which might be less than yours. We are really happy. I have some real good friends who just are over the moon and just still call this their favorite Star Wars story, even over some of the classic movies. And so we're there for that. We love when Star Wars is celebrated. We really do. So we'll update you on what's coming there. Final story of the day is us catching up a little bit to the trailer that was dropped last week. It is Star Wars Terrifying Tales. This is the new Lego. I was going to say a holiday special. More could be on the way. They, of course, did the Life Day kind of renewed the Star Wars holiday special for the modern era, which we enjoy. And we know that on October 1st on Disney Plus, we're going to be experiencing Star Wars Terrifying Tales. And we got a trailer. So, Joseph, what are some of our favorite jokes, bits, reveals? And then we'll dig a little deeper.
Oh, I'm so excited for this one. I really love Halloween. And in particular, I like Halloween specials that are just really owning it. And I love how much it's like, it is Star Wars mashed up with Halloween, but it's also just kind of like real world Halloween of just like a wolf howl. I'm sure that is a specific Star Wars animal's wolf howl. Maybe that's the noise the shack makes. I don't know. But I'm extremely excited for this whole thing. I just love the aesthetic of all of it. And I thought they are doing a great job of pulling in the elements of Star Wars that do have kind of one foot or claw in the genre of horror to begin with, right?
Yeah.
So some of the things that I animatronic Vader was very, very funny. The whole idea of turning his castle into kind of a cheap tourist trap is hilarious, and forcing Vader to be animatronic, very funny. Maul's legs not working, like that's really getting, that's like we're now far beyond, hey, everybody knows stormtroopers are bad shots from the original trilogy, right? Like now we're into like, hey, remember on that animated show when he had spider legs? That was weird, right? And he had those big, not even the spider legs, he's found with the spider legs, and he gets the weird horse legs almost. And let's make fun of that, you know? I love that stuff.
Yeah, Star Wars looking in on itself, and what was once old, once new, is now old to be made fun of. Love that as well. I enjoyed some of the favorable jokes, bits, and reveals. Yeah, the Empire Emporium, really funny, and with Galaxy's Edge out there, it's meta as well, I guess you could say. Zombie battle droids was pretty funny looking too, but a couple beats there. Luke being carried off as a TIE fighter pilot. We're going to discuss a little bit more about that in a minute, but I like that visual. The Ren reveal, looks like we got Christian Slater as Ren, right? And to actually see a character we've only seen in comics so far, and now in Lego form, I really enjoyed that. And look, the Shining joke at the end, I'm there for it.
Oh, that was a very, very good joke. And like, I'll bang on about Star Wars themes, right? It's taking something that is just sort of like mythic and terrifying and making it super technical. I love it. It's a great joke.
Yeah, so a lot of cool things in this little trailer. And we got these three stories we'll be following. Of course, the overall theme is Poe Dameron and a new kind of young pal, Crash. And with BB-8 there as well.
BB-8. I thought that it was his name for a second, the way you said it. His new pal, Crash.
Crash. They crash at Fortress Vader. And Vinay, voiced by Tony Hale, is going to be taking around and telling them some stories that are not quite true. But we've got these stories. The Lost Boy. This is Ben Solo meeting Ren and the Knights of Ren. The Dueling Monstrosities, which imagines how Maul and Grievous were reborn, which is actually pretty cool. We're getting some more Grievous stuff, too. And the Wookiee's Paw, which imagines what if all of Luke's greatest wishes were immediately granted. That one, in terms of Star Wars what ifs, is pretty delicious. So what lessons and themes do we hope to experience and learn from these tales, Joseph?
Well, I like that the Luke one almost looks a little bit like What If, right? I mean, you got the Marvel What If series running. We did a ranked episode. I mean, it's going to be comedy. It's fun. It's for Lego. We know it's not a true story, but it's got a little bit of that What If vibe of What If Luke joined the Empire, right?
It absolutely does. And everything about it, I'm intrigued. Like that's my number one interest right now. It's just to see. Even though it's Lego and it's going to have its Lego sense of humor, to see what we can get out of that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, what I'm excited to get out of it is I think there is like a good and fine and it must be acknowledged marketing that these kinds of fun specials, if a young kid just kind of likes Star Wars and has maybe watched some of the movies, right? This is a great way to introduce them to some deep dive characters, right? And you can see a kid going like, but where's Ren and the Knights of Ren from? Where can I learn more about that? And a frustrated parent has to Google, okay, I guess I got to buy this comic book.
That four-issue comic run? What?
All right.
Yeah.
But I kind of joke and poke fun at it, but I think it is a legitimate and a good way to just provide lots of different ways into Star Wars for people of all different ages. There's the one line from Poe to the kid, Crash, which is not his name. About dealing with fear, you know, and that's really great to take something that is so Halloween focused that trades on all the fun of fear and give a nice Star Wars moral of, I think that's so in such an important idea for people of all ages that fear just exists. It's true. the bad thing isn't to feel fear. The challenge is how do you deal with fear? And I think it's seems like it's going to really, you know, have that nice message that these Lego, all the Lego Star Wars is good at having a ton of comedy and still having that heart.
Yeah. And the thing for me is like, we're not digging super deep into Lego because, you know, we feel we need to. It will be there because the previous holiday special was really deep and had fun Star Wars themes and this stuff. This is how you tell Star Wars stories. And we got a tale of power. We got a tale of devotion to the undead, which is that that's a Halloween indeed, and a tale of desire. So the lessons, you know, that Poe and the others might be learning or telling us, it's tales of service and, of course, letting go and patience, which is something you and I talked pretty recently here on Star Wars, and how Luke wanting this right now to get off that rock and join the Imperial Academy would have potentially changed everything. It's going to be fun to see it, yes, through the Lego eye, but just kind of see it again and see where some of these lessons land for me.
Yeah, exactly. And my final thing for this is I hope it's a huge success, and I hope it makes the powers that be at Lucasfilm say, you know, we really need a full Star Wars horror movie or show, because I still really want Star Wars totally through the horror filter.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think the closest thing coming down the pipeline is the Acolyte, but maybe even more.
Done yeah.
On in. And then I'll have to confront my fear of horror movies.
We can find a bright lit space in public for you to watch it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. So that is a look at Star Wars Terrifying Tales and the Knights of the Old Republic remaking news. Yes, remaking news. That's what I'm calling it here. I'll blame the slot machines for one final time. Before we take a quick break, reset and ask your questions, answer your questions while you ask them. We are also going to recommend an audiobook and one you can try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
We are still recommending Out of the Shadows by Justina Ireland. It is a new High Republic book, not even the newest story right now, but we are going to be reading it and diving into it soon. So if you want to get caught up, that's the one we're recommending, Out of the Shadows.
To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, that's it. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about your questions here on Force Center. And Ken's going to take a nap. All right. See Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. All right, welcome back to Force Center number 357 in our ongoing series discussing Star Wars. And we cannot have an ongoing series, an ongoing podcast without our wonderful Force Center friends. Joseph, we always love their questions. We got another round of great ones this week. What do we got?
That's right. We got two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we go first to Twitter. Geeky Gator asks, Kenobi has almost always been a supporting character in other people's stories as he furthers and helps them on their journey. Now, in the Kenobi show, he will be the lead and main focus. What do you think that will look and feel like in the show? Also, I feel like many people expect this show to be mostly somber and sad as he mourns his losses. But Star Wars always has moments of joy, hope, and happiness. as well as silliness. What do you think those moments will look like for Kenobi at this point in his life? That is a bunch of great Kenobi questions all in one, and it makes me so damn happy. There's the first bit of joy. I'm excited for this show. But Ken, let's tackle this kind of first part of Geeky Gator's question of the focus being on Kenobi. What do you think that will feel or look like as Geeky Gator asks?
Yeah, that's a great point, Geeky Gator. I mean, it's something you don't really stop and think about a lot, other than some specific arcs in the Clone Wars that maybe might pop to mind. Kenobi is the wise wizard. That literally was his role in New Hope. and then kind of the teacher, mentor, parental figure, big brother figure for Anakin. So, yeah, all his moments shining on other people. I think, and I guess I was thinking maybe some of those Clone Wars episodes and maybe that being a template, but I think this will be different because where he is in his life. So I think it will feel, I think this will be a little bit of a slower show with bits of action in it. At least I have to be honest. That's what I want. We joke about the old man around the campfire. I really want that. And just him kind of processing it's an introspective story. It's an introspective movie. I like I'm not drawing direct conclusion, but I love like Up in the Air with George Clooney, just a grumpy man looking out the window, wondering what the hell's happened to his life. Like that's kind of where I've been most of my life. So I kind of want that and then therefore dive into what we can learn about Kenobi at this point.
Yeah, I think given the fact of this show's history of development of that it was a movie and then it did get expanded to or adapted to fit the television, the streaming structure, but really looking at it the way a couple of the MCU shows have been structured when there's six episodes, that breaks down really well into kind of moving like a movie and having a sort of three-act structure. Right. And if I had to bet, I think that first episode is really going to be, I think, a lot of what you're talking about or like what we've imagined is that will be really setting the table for how's he doing?
Yeah.
10 years after Revenge of the Sith. And probably toward the end, have a catalyst that sets him off on his adventure. And I think that how it's going to feel is the word that comes to mind is cathartic. Because I think that we are going to meet somebody who is really dealing with his demons. And there's a catharsis in that of just like turning to face the thing that has been haunting you the most, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the reasons that I've always responded to Attack the Clones and loved Attack the Clones is that's the most Kenobi focused on the big screen, right? Because he's not going through an arc. He's not really being changed.
Yeah.
He's just this steadfast guy who believes in what the Jedi are doing and is getting it done. And his way of getting it done is, tricking Zam Wessel at the bar, yeah. You know, having some Jawa juice at a diner with his old buddy and then not getting any thrill from fighting or flying, but just doing it because it needs to be done. And I think that is an essential part of Kenobi, but also I think what this story is about is he has all of that purpose has been taken from him.
Mm-hmm.
So what is his purpose now? And I think that gets into some of the joys that we might be able to see as he maybe, he does have purpose, right? He is watching over Luke. He has been given the training assignment at the end of Revenge of the Sith to learn to commune with Qui-Gon. So it's not like he doesn't have purpose, but I think he might be floundering. And this story is about him regaining a sense of purpose.
See, it is exactly like Clooney staring at the flight board, wondering where he's going to go next. No, well said, as always. You're so right about Attack the Clones being, Obi-Wan having an adventure, man. It's part of it. And I want that to be in there as well. I mean, we joke. We always joke. Yeah, I literally could have six episodes of Kenobi drinking at the bar. I'm sure I'd be happy. But do I want that? No. I want action. I want something. I want something to pick up and go as he rediscovers the purpose. I think well said specifically on that of him kind of maybe already knowing the purpose. You and I have talked about the great turning of the page in his life, going from the scars of Anakin to the hope of the future. So to see that, even if it does happen in a bar, it'll be fun. And you're right. That's some of the moments of silliness. I go to that certain point of view story of, Obi-Wan dropping off the carved wood toys for Luke, right? That's a sweet thing. That's joy. That's warmth. Stillness. And a lot of times you're like, hey, if there's some great tragedy or trauma in your life, it might be a little thing. It might be a puppy dog that you pet, or it might be a laugh, or it might be a drink at the bar. And I think you will find that trademark Kenobi sense of humor throughout the show in those moments as he tries to process it all.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it for the silliness or the just kind of moment to moment thing of, you know, a part of Obi-Wan's character is that he is grumpy, right? And even in the prequel films, that some of the best comedy from Obi-Wan is just him being grumpy of, you know, this is just more bleep I have to do. Not that he doesn't believe into it, but he doesn't get that joy out of it, that thrill out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
His, you know, first line in Revenge of the Sith, when he's on a mission that he's planned to rescue the Chancellor, he's full of purpose to, you know, help try to maybe get close to bringing this damn war to an end, doing his duty. And he's like, Anakin points out Grievous' ship. And he's like, oh, I see it. Oh, this is going to be easy. Like, that sort of like grumpy charm, I think, will be there. I think it would be great, great to get some quality Kenobi in a bar time with that kind of thing. So I think on that just kind of surface level, I think his character brings a little bit of fun in humor. But in terms of like the great things that Geeky Gator is saying about, you know, Star Wars always, even in its darkest episodes, right, has some hope and some happiness. And I think for me, if this is the story, if one element of the story is he's finally able to fully reconnect with Qui-Gon, that's a huge burst of joy, right?
Yeah.
And if the big picture story is Kenobi turning and facing his greatest demon that he did not stop Vader nor save Anakin, he didn't do either of the things that he could have, mm-hmm. that I think that's what's leading us to sadness of like, okay, well then we know he's not going to succeed in saving Vader and turning Anakin back to the light. So this is going to be sad. But exactly what you were saying, I think it is going to end on such a moment of hope where Kenobi fully accepts and commits to and believes and is truly restored by his new understanding of who he thinks Luke is going to be and what Luke's purpose is. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to have a maybe bittersweet, but I think it's going to have that hope because I think that's the change that Kenobi is going to go through is, you know, how much he believes in Luke.
Yeah, a renewal, a rebirth, a refresh, a refocus, all those kind of wonderful things. And a big theme to me, potentially, we always say potentially, we don't quite know, is this, you know, massive guilt and working through that and refining yourself, or refining purpose and reconciling your failures that are racked with guilt. That's a big one. That's a potential big theme. You say it so well there, Joseph. Like, I had a mission. I had two. I didn't do either. That's not good. And now I got this new one that I'm not even sure about. I think he's, you know, sure about, but I think we find him in a different spot. That's what's always pulled us in about this potential idea of where do we find him in New Hope, or now even the Twin Suns episode of Rebels. We find him there. How does he get there? Because he needs to get there. And, you know, along the way, I'm sure he'll have a laugh.
I'm sure he'll have a laugh, and I'm sure he will cut at least one hand off in a bar. It's just what he does in bars. And yes, as you're saying, rightfully so, I get very excited about some of the information that we do know about this show, but then I do fill in with some assumptions, and I want to make sure that I'm speculating responsibly. Many of the things that I hope for might not happen. These are guesses on my part, and if I am wrong, I will try to take a deep breath and just embrace what is there. But great question, Geeky Gator. You ready to move on, Ken?
I am excited for Kenobi stuff. We know that. I even that picture this past week that came out of Hayden Christensen at a con with a Kenobi stunt team like hat on. That got me excited.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm very excited. All right. We're going to go to a question from Nick Field. Nick asks, Lucasfilm reaches out to you and says they want Kathleen Kennedy to come on the show. What questions would you ask her? What topics would you discuss? How would you prepare for the conversation? Put everyone else's thoughts aside. This is about what Ken and Joseph want to know. This is a fun question, Ken, because, you know, here on Force Center, we mostly interview one another, or yeah, a conversation, as it's sometimes called. But you and I have both in other podcasts interviewed other people. I think we both think about interviewing is a specific skill and something you and I both enjoy doing. So I thought this was a really fun question from that perspective. Where does your mind go when you take off your Kenobi stunt team hat and put on your I'm an interviewer hat and you're interviewing Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah. So
what do you think about?
I think Nick asked specifically, how would you prepare for the conversation? And we, you and I probably maybe have different styles. I don't prepare a lot. I like to sit down, roll up my sleeves and see kind of where they want to take me with the stories they're telling. Doesn't mean I'm not prepared or know who I'm interviewing and everything, but that's kind of how I love to approach it. So therefore I always have like, where do I want to go in my mind? What do I maybe want answered to what Nick's asking here? And I with her, it would be the core Star Wars stories and what she really feels that, and she has really talked about it before. And I think you and I are in general agreement of some of the brief sound bites we've gotten over, you know, it's a personal or something, you know, there's some part of every storyteller is in these movies and all those kind of big themes of Star Wars. She seems to get that. And there can be debate on individual show ideas and, you know, rumors of things she's nixed or rumored of things that she's pushed through. I don't really know all those answers 100%. So I'd want to hear from her. What excites you about a new Star Wars story? I'd start the conversation there.
That's a great place to start it. Yeah, I think I would approach it as I'm kind of interviewing, you know, the human being. Mm-hmm. But I think I would approach it as, you know, there are different kinds of interviews, right? Depending on what people are talking about. And I feel like the really fascinating thing to me would be, I want to learn who Kathleen Kennedy is as a person, but I also want to learn her massive amounts of wisdom about being a producer. You know, she has a job that, you know, a lot of people don't understand. A producer can mean a million different things. And there aren't that many people in the world mm-hmm. who have had the producing experience that she has.
Right.
I think I would just start from that of like, what is the day-to-day work of being a producer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes for my podcast Obsessed, I'll ask people to explain it like aliens landed.
Yeah.
They want to know what this is. So to take that real big step back of what is it on a day-to-day basis? How do you define it for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I think without asking her about specific decisions, because I think people would be looking for that kind of almost more like the clickbait, right? Of sure. Did Kathleen Kennedy decide X or Y, you know? And I think I'd be more interested in like, for you, in your view, what kinds of decisions is it essential that you are a part of? And what kinds of decisions are like, I hired that person. That was my decision. That's what I do. I'm a producer. And now I trust them.
Yeah.
But obviously, then there is your responsibility to step in at times. So how do you make those decisions? You know, I think really getting her expert opinion on being a producer is the main thing I'd be interested in.
Yeah. And in terms of some specific stuff, whether it be, you know, say Rogue One or Solo. Yeah, I'm not the type that jumps right to that either. I know you're not as well, but what if I was to bring this up, or if it was to have the conversation was to go that way, I would want to know what was the final straw, even if the straw was business, even if the straw was, hey, or just personalities. You get a call from Alden Ehrenreich saying something's wrong. It's probably me. I guess you're going to fire me and you remove Lord Miller. Like, again, this is a dream scenario, NDAs and agreements and 50 lawyers waiting outside the podcast door. But not, I wouldn't want the clickbait gossipy stuff like you're saying, but like, how does that decision that you eventually had to make the buck stops with you, how does that tie to what you feel about movies and what you know about producing and what you feel about Star Wars stories? And what made you finally go, yeah, this is broke and we have to fix it at all costs, even if there might be, you know, egg on my face. And number one, you know, how are you concerned about egg on your face? Or do you know that in your position you can't be? I would try to approach it from that angle. You know, I wouldn't want necessarily, you know, maybe off microphone. I'd be, hey, tell me. But in terms of an interview and trying to get the actual story, I think I'm with you on that. Of just like, take me to that moment and tell me what made you make the next step.
Yeah. And without asking any specifics, because right now she's not in a position to answer a lot of certain specifics, right?
Yeah.
To me, it's more valuable to get the sense of exactly what you're saying. Like, what do you value and why, and what is worth taking a risk on a big decision or, you know, real that kind of thing. Then, you know, if you're a fan and you want to, you can read those tea leaves, right? But you're coming from a place of honesty about a person as a human and how they approach their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the other thing for me is that for me, that would just be like the intro stuff. And what I'd really want to get into is just her personal experiences about the things that she can talk about now, because she's not going to answer, you know, she's not going to answer what was the final straw for, you know, moving away from Trevorrow's script. She's not going to answer that, right? But what she can answer about is the whole rest of her massive and impressive experience, right? Yep. So I would just love to ask her about, like, what films did you learn the most on? What is the funniest thing that's ever happened, you know, on a set? For films that are, you know, decades old, which films look like they were in rough shape but turned out great, or vice versa, and you can talk about it now, you know, and get to the heart of those things that we could learn more about her as a person and what it means to be a producer. Because time has passed on some of those projects.
Yeah, and I'd love to have some fun conversations about the making of some of the more popular big movies, right? The ones that helped influence a lot of our lives. For me, it'd be like Indiana Jones and stuff like that. And just tell me a George story. Tell me a Steven story. Tell me why they were so darn depressed on Temple of Doom. I know this, the reasons, divorces and whatnot, but tell me how they actually were. You know, tell me some of those moments, if you can.
Yeah, and how did that affect you, right? You're young and learning the biz and from depressed divorced guys. How's that going?
How's that go for you?
Yeah, it would be great, great fun. Great question. Any more thoughts before we move on, Ken?
No, I mean, you know, you and I don't do a lot of interviews on Force Center for a lot of varied reasons. But yeah, if Lucasfilm says Force Center, we randomly pulled your name out of a hat. You get Kathy Kennedy. Yes, absolutely. That would be a dream.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to move on to our questions from patrons on Patreon. This one comes to us from Anthony King. Anthony says, hello, Force Center. With a lot of Star Wars heading to Disney Plus in the future, I wanted to get your thoughts on limited engagement runs or fan events at cinemas to showcase new season openers, finales, or just special episodes. I would love to see the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian on a big screen with a bunch of my friends eating popcorn and just losing it when Luke Skywalker appears again. Although I understand they want to only have this content on streaming. I think it could be a lucrative endeavor as well. Do you think that could be something Lucasfilm might explore? Is there an episode of Star Wars television you would like to see on the big screen for the first time? Also, let's put together a game of Star Wars Tag at Celebration. I call playing as Kit Fisto. Thanks. The great Star Wars Tag game. That's awesome. Yeah. Ken, there's a great question. How do you feel about what bits of Star Wars that have not been on the big screen that you would like to see in the big screen in a theater?
Yeah, I think it would be, I think it would be fun. You know, Game of Thrones did, was season 4, the final 2 episodes. They put them in theaters after the season had ended. I think it was an IMAX experience. I didn't get to experience it. There were some local screens. But it was a lot of fun for those that went that I knew. I did get to see the Rebels finale in a screening room, which was in a big screen with a lot of people. And that was a fun experience. So, yeah, I'm all for this. I think there's a lot of logistics that would be, you know, make for a boring conversation right now. And the streaming versus theaters and this. Taking that aside, that's not the spirit of Anthony's question. It would absolutely be fun. And I think people would absolutely enjoy it and pay good money if Disney needed more money, which who doesn't, right? So, yeah, I think the fans would appreciate that. And I don't necessarily, it'll be, you know, I could see it around a convention or celebration or something like that. But just in general, across the country, across the world, on this particular weekend, you get to go see the shows, because that's the one thing that's missing from streaming, right, is the communal experience in general.
Yeah. I mean, I think just being able to see, like, you know, the trailer for The Rise of Skywalker at Star Wars Celebration, you know, that's kind of a different thing because it's reveals, it's at a convention. But I think that's the thing that excites me. Like, some of these things I would love to see on a big screen. But what I would really love to see them with is a critical mass of fans to really get that vocal response, right? And I think that's what Anthony's asking about. So yeah, that the season 2 finale of Mandalorian is a great example of that. You know, something like Kenobi, because I can't stop talking about it. 6 episodes, that would be great to have like a 2-night screening event, right, where you buy tickets for both nights. If you had like that critical mass of fans, even if you didn't, it'd still be fun to see it on a big screen. I feel like eventually we are going to see that final arc of Clone Wars on the big screen, since it seemed to be made exactly for that experience, right?
Yeah, literally.
Like it's structured that way, even changing the conventions of the beginning and the opening and the closing of the episodes, you know, to make it more movie-like. That would be really, really cool. And yeah, I think it's really interesting to think about how do you make that that happen, not just with all the streaming stuff, but, you know, advertising to get it to truly be an event with critical mass.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone be here at this place this time. Yeah.
And because obviously, like, that's the magic of the old internet, of things like podcasts like this get the fans to come together from all places. Like here in L.A., when Hollywood Bowl, John Williams concert, and he finally plays Star Wars usually at the end of the concert. And then, you know, thousands of lightsabers explode out of the audience. Those kinds of communal experiences, it would be so great to experience. With something that is the love of the known, right? It's a different experience when you see something for the first time and there's the shock or the surprise, but it would be great to have that experience of like, oh, we all know it's coming. There's the X-Wing. Let's go.
Yeah. You made me think of something too. It was like, obviously I see movies that I, you know, haven't seen before in the theater with people. But a TV show, man, I get so like, everyone shut up. Don't say a word. Don't eat crunchy snacks. And I don't want you around anyways, but I guess you got to be here. I mean, you and I experienced that in a hotel in Chicago for the episode one of Game of Thrones season 8, where I just kind of view things like that. So seeing like if it was Mandalorian season 3 premiere at a theater, I'd be like, I might wait, but probably end up going.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're in a fascinating period with Disney Plus, where I think right now it does seem like they're staying focused on subscribers. If it's on Disney Plus, it's on Disney Plus. But as the years roll on, I think we will see some Blu-rays and hopefully some screenings too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Great question, Anthony. I can't wait to be in a theater with friends screaming about Luke Skywalker. Moving on to our final question from Michael McCarsel. Michael says, while listening to a recent Star Wars Ranked, I actually got to thinking a lot about Padme after the comment about 3PO regaining his memories and saying, oh, Mistress Padme. Quick side note for anybody who hasn't listened to that episode of Star Wars Ranked, Ken came up with a great idea of if there were a special edition of Disney era Star Wars films, what kind of things might we want to see? And I had thrown out the idea that 3PO got his whole memory restored at the end of Rise of Skywalker and remembered Padme. So that's what Michael is referencing. Back to Michael's question. On top of being a major tearjerker, I got to thinking about just how much of a loss her death was to the galaxy. On top of the tragedy of her children never knowing her, there's all of the good she could have done and the tragedy she could have prevented during the reign of the Empire. I eventually came to the idea that losing her might have been more impactful on the galaxy than Anakin's fall to the dark side. I guess my question is just, what are your thoughts on this idea? Am I off base? Thanks, and may the Force be with you. Thank you, Michael. This is a great question, and thanks for the kind thoughts on that episode of Ranked. Ken, where do you go with this? The loss to the galaxy of Padme.
Yeah, it's a super impactful death, and something. This is one of the reasons why we continue to kind of celebrate and explore Padme here and why, you know, we're super excited for E.K. Johnston's third book to take us into her death and maybe get a little bit more insight into that. As far as his ideas here, of, you know, what would have happened and what she have done during the reign of the Empire. I look, you know, Mon Mothma kind of takes up the flag, so to speak, when you know, Padme gone and then Bail. A little bit later on there, we see Mothma kind of emerge as a unifying leader for the rebellion, but they still have to be secret. They still have to be in cells. I don't necessarily know if that would have been smart to change, quite frankly. It's probably a good strategy to that, but Padme could have been a bigger public figure. And you'd have to lock her away in a bunker and make sure she's safe because all the bounty hunters and assassins coming after her would be extensive. But you know what I mean? Of just like her being front and center and saying no to everything that was happening in this new empire, this so-called safe and secure society. I don't think she'd sit idly by. This we know. That's not an insightful comment, but just it would be louder. I think she'd be more like, enough of this. Let's do this. Let's find some ways. Maybe first through politics, maybe first through traditional means, but I think she would be ready to fight back. And I think it could have happened sooner, maybe. I don't know. But that's where I go initially.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really fascinating. There's so many great what ifs to this, right? There's a story of what Bail and Mon Mothma actually do, and many other senators that you're so right to point out, that clearly they don't have any illusion of maybe this is going to work out, right?
Yeah.
But they clearly make the choice of like, well, we're not ready to immediately fight it and in sort of full scale war type way. We'll quietly build and we'll do everything we can within the Senate. And I think you get that picture from even Rogue One and A New Hope that while they did not, weren't able to contain the empire, that there were maybe a little bit of a thorn in the side of the emperor, this danger of if they fight things too much, they could inspire people, right? Like, because I think that's why you get things like that business meeting with Krennic and Vader, and Vader telling him, we've already decided, you know, it was a mining accident that destroyed Jedha City, right? And they're doing that to keep the Senate. And there's so much in A New Hope that's about like, if these rebels keep gaining support in the Senate, and I think it really is about, to me, this story of Palpatine knows that he can keep people down if he can keep them away from hope and make them feel alone, right?
Yeah.
And I think the interesting question is Padme is very aware of those dynamics. she fights without knowing Palpatine's the real enemy. She fights him on this again and again in the Clone Wars animated series. So there is a part of me that says that she would go, I need to take more direct action. I'm going to run from the empire and I'm going to do everything I can to spread the word. I'm going to organize all that. But then you get to the what if of like, well, if she survived and she had Luke and Leia,
yeah,
how much would she say, I need to fight in a different way so I can protect them? Or would she say, I can't help that much in the political arena because it's mostly a sham right now. I'm going to get Anakin back because I believe in it. You know, the fascinating thing to me is I think we know from the second we meet her in Phantom Menace, she isn't going to sit by. So the question is, how is she going to push back?
And there's a lot of wonderful, questions that, more what ifs that spring out of what ifs, which is part of the fun of them. You mentioned the Anakin thing. I mean, what's Palpatine going to do with Vader? And Vader's like, is that Padme on the holoscreen?
Yeah.
He's going to control that. And then you talk about with the kids. I would say, Luke ain't a farm boy anymore, maybe, but, Leia can still see politics definitely be in the path, but also Padme's like, hey, I probably got 2 Force sensitive children here. Let's go find Kenobi or Quinlan Voss or someone to train here. I hear, is that Ahsoka girl still around? I was friends with her. Where'd she go? That would be interesting just to see, specifically looking at Leia's path and how different it would be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think there are a lot of different different ways that Padme may have been able to respond. I think the kind of the second part of Michael's question about, how much damage did it do to the galaxy to lose her. One of the things that I really appreciate about Padme, it's there in the prequel films, but it's really there strongly in the Clone Wars animated series, that I think Padme is this one of these characters that is really about everyone has power. You don't need to be born with the Force flowing through you. And I think she has that very socio-political perspective that everyone has value. And I think one of the things that the Empire and Palpatine does really successfully, it's not just propaganda, but like making things hard for people, right? If you are like too hungry or tired or apathetic to do anything about a bad situation, it makes it easier for a dictator, right? And I think that's what my mind goes when Michael asks about more damage to the galaxy, of like, I think Padme is somebody who would have such great an intuitive understanding of the people should feel empowered. There, it's a real, that's the challenge, is how do we keep people having all the basics that they need in life so that they are strong enough to push back on Palpatine?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Padme meeting someone like Infant's Nest would be a pretty interesting conversation, right?
Right.
Just the resources and ability to live and survive being swept away by the Empire. Wouldn't sit well with Padme.
No, no. And I think Padme would have some good budget proposals on how to spend that $60 million from the Coaxium. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. And all this makes me think we love discussing Padme here. We really do. Michael knows this. It seems like he's in line with that, too. I know you've mentioned in the sequel trilogy eras, particularly episode 9, of maybe a lack of Padme and even in passing, a picture on the wall. And I really, really second that. I looked to Kenobi and I looked to Andor as two series where we possibly could get that corrected, possibly get not just a mention, but an actual discussion about Padme and Padme's legacy to both the children and to the rebellion. It'd be, you know, I don't need an entire episode of Padme's legacy, but like you got Mothma, you got Bail, and you got in the Andor series, they would be working with her if she wasn't here, and they're working maybe to honor her in many ways, as well as, you know, help the galaxy and the people in it. But I'm looking to those two series to hopefully maybe right a little bit of a wrong.
Yeah, me too. I think for Kenobi, there's just, it seems so obvious that we know that he is facing Vader in some way, so he is facing the problems there. How can the last words of the mother of Anakin's children not be ringing in Kenobi's head, you know?
Yeah.
So I have high hopes. Could absolutely be wrong, but I have high hopes there. And Ahsoka, right? If we have a whole series to explore Ahsoka, Ahsoka spent a lot of time with Padme too.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and it's exciting. Something I'm looking forward to there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all these shows should really wrestle with the legacy of Padme, and then they should all be put together so we can screen them in a theater. That's my opinion.
There you go. I like it.
That is it for our questions. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Anthony, Nick, and Geeky Gator. Those are the questions, Ken.
Those are the questions, and we are out of here for today. But hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Not as active over there, but we're there. Find us and maybe we'll get more active. Hey, you know, there you go. Myself, by the way. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more, including Spotify and Amazon Music. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can go to support us directly. I am back from traveling, which means if you signed up to get that exclusive Force Center 1000 poster commemorating our 1000th episode, that'll start going out very soon. You can follow me at Ken Napsuck or go to KenNapsuck.com for information on all the things I do. Got upcoming comedy dates in New York and beyond, so stay tuned for that. We always like to highlight something of interest, something to get involved with in the real world out there. There's a lot out there, as we always say, a lot out there. So not choosing one over the other, but I go back to this one a lot. This is the CaliforniaFireFoundation.org. If you want to donate and support, this is not just for the areas affected by fires, supporting the firefighters, but also for a lot of the children of fallen firefighters and family of fallen firefighters. And I thought about this one because driving back from Vegas, there was a fire breaking out in the hills above the 5 freeway that I kind of saw in real time. And man, made me think of the danger of fire season, especially now. So check out cafirefoundation.org. Joseph.
That is great. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. I have been busy studying Star Wars, so I haven't had time to make some little videos of my Star Wars action figures. But after I'm done Star Warsing, I'm going to get back to Star Warsing. So it'll be nice to have the time for that. So check that out. You can also find all of my other comedy adventures on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. And the organization I'd like to highlight this week is Vote Forward. It is an organization that sets up the opportunity for you to write letters with a little personal message encouraging people to vote. This week, they're wrapping up a big campaign, so there's still time to jump onto that. If you're curious about that, you can go to their website at votefwd.org.
Check it out. Check it all out. Get plugged in. And thank you so much for supporting and listening and sharing all that you can about Four Center. We're happy to have you here, Four Center friends. So for Padme's legacy, Obi-Wan's fun, silly drinking, this has been Four Center.